They're doing the hand jive all over town.
Hand jive! Hand jive! Hand jive! Do that great hand jive!
Mama, look at John John Doe!
He's doing that hand jive with Sister Flo.
Grandma can be persistent!
Said do that hand jive one more time.
Well, the doctor, the lawyer, and the Indian chief,
they all did a crazy baby.
Good morning and welcome to episode 249 of Taking the Charge Podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. I'm David Hein of Hein News. Thank you for stopping by for a little bit of basketball. And I'm going to stick with a little bit of basketball today, this week, kind of running late in the day and have a whole bunch of stuff that need to get done. So going to keep it kind of short, but I do want to, of course, get you a show. If you want to get in contact with us, go ahead and reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Hein News, H-E-I-N-N-E-W-S. The email address is Hein News at gmx.de. The website is hinnews.com. There's the Facebook group. Just put in the search bar Taking the Charge Podcast and you can reach us there. Do ask you to be to knock on the door and we will welcome you in. There is, you can go to iTunes and rate and review the show, and you can become a patron, support the show. Go to patreon.com/takingthecharge. And you can support the show. All right. Biggest thing, I guess, that I was kind of dealing with, or you know, kind of watching, was the FIBA Americas, the FIBA U16 Americas Championship. USA, it was pretty clear that they were going to go to the final and they were going to face Canada. Canada, you know, obviously missing two big guys, important players in Addison Patterson and Josh Hemmings. Cassius McNeil was there. McNeely was there and played pretty well. But, you know, just by far not enough firepower. I actually didn't watch the Americans that much and didn't end up watching loads of the final because it was pretty much a blowout right away. Final, the MVP was Vernon Carey Jr., a big guy, some nice versatility. Zion Harmon was pretty strong, as well as the leading point guard. You also had Romeo Weems. James Wiseman, some really good size. But, you know, for whatever reason, I guess it's kind of like Lithuania. I didn't really pay all that much attention. Was actually concentrating on some of the other guys a little bit more just to kind of see what they had. Canada is the main team I was looking at just to see because I wanted to kind of get a feel for what they, you know, what they might look at the under 17 next year, you know, in addition to, you know, when they do get Patterson and Hemmings back. You know, McNeely definitely showed a lot of promise. You could tell that he kind of forced it a little bit. You know, shot only 42% for the tournament. Did shoot 48% from 3-point range. Had some good open looks and hit those, but his other shots were kind of, he wasn't quite as solid as I had expected him to be. But again, you know, you think that, you figure that once he gets a couple more weapons in there, that'll make it that much easier. Luka Sokota was a nice player. Was impressed with him. Good shooter from outside, could drive to the basket. Shamar Rathan Mays is the younger brother of Xavier, I believe Xavier. He ended up playing the most minutes. I think it would have been interesting to see if he had a smaller role, you know, like if you give Patterson the ball more, and, but you know, Patterson wasn't there, so you can't do anything about it. I did really like Taron Todd, especially the defensive presence that he had out there was really hounding guys, and they had some good rebounders with Benjamin Kirka and Parashand, two bigs that were pretty nice, especially Benjamin Kirka. You know, LeSean had some good offensive rebounding, 3.8 offensive rebounds. But I did like Kirka quite a bit, and you know, and Maurice, right? Malachi Nadur, you know, pretty good all arounder, and so this was a nice group, you know, and again, it'd be interesting to see what happens when they get the two big guys back. Yeah, so. I'm not gonna talk too much more about many of the other teams. Argentina, you know, they had their, you know, what you figured would be their main guys. Charles, is that right? Charles Badiaku, the younger brother Badiaku, was a pretty nice player. Very raw, you could tell that, but it seems like there's a lot of stuff in there. 2002 born, so Argentina, Shapiro, you know, was the main guy. People know coming in, he kind of struggled quite a bit, but Gaston Bertona played pretty well. Was impressed with what he could do. Not the greatest of size, you know, for a guard, but could do a couple things. So Canada USA in the final, USA dominated, and Canada reached the final. Third place went to Puerto Rico. They beat Argentina in the third place game, and the fifth place game was decided by Dominican Republic. They ended up beating Mexico. Mexico. I was kind of hoping that Paraguay would actually make it to the fifth place game. Paraguay kind of won over my heart a little bit. The first time that they'd ever play in this tournament, and you know, they hosted the under 15 South American Championship last year, and you kind of had a feel that it was kind of like the Chile attempt to, you know, kind of push the program up a little bit, and you know, they actually gave Canada a pretty good fight in that first game. Ended up losing only by 8 points. So that kind of sparked interest in them, and you know, they ended up then losing to Argentina, but they were still, you know, within the chance to make it to the World Cup, to the basketball U-17 basketball World Cup. But the loss to Mexico in the 5-8 classification game ended up ending their hopes. And then Dominican Republic with David Jones was just too much. And so, yeah, congrats to Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Kind of, you know, so it's kind of like the five teams that everybody kind of expected going into the tournament, with USA, Canada, Argentina already being there as hosts. But then Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico going through again. Paraguay would have been kind of fun to see them, just because they would have been a nice story. But you know, Dominican Republic has really started to establish themselves as a pretty good basketball program. So, just some numbers on the USA. They ended up winning. Their winning margin was 61 points a game, and they only gave up 55 points a game, scoring 112.6 points a game. So, a thorough dominance by Don Showalter's USA team. So congratulations to them. They still have never lost in this competition, and Don Showalter has never lost a U-17 or U-16 or U-17 game. So obviously clear favorites going back to Argentina. Rosario and Santa Fe are going to be hosting the under 17, the FIBA under 17 basketball World Cup next year in the summer. All right, so really quick, just a little bit, actually before NBA, I did want to say, pretty cool logo. The D League is officially now the G League, being with Gatorade being the new sponsor, name sponsor, and the Milwaukee Bucks have a their team is going to be called the Wisconsin Herd, and a pretty cool logo. You know, I'm not a huge logo and mascot guy, mascot probably a little bit more than logo, but you know. Go and take a look at the logo for the Wisconsin Herd, and so it should be fun. Just a little bit about the draft. I think I'm just going to kind of I think we'll talk about it next week a little bit more. And you know, obviously there was the trade with 76ers jumping from 3-1 to they're going to grab Marco Fultz. You know, Boston dropping down to 3, they can still grab Tatum, they can still go Jackson, whoever they feel like it. Of course, the draft's going tomorrow, so if you don't hear this until tomorrow, Thursday in the evening, you'll it won't matter. So they can, you know, obviously go whichever way they want. Boston do, they didn't feel like Fultz is necessarily, you know, that much of a difference. So, you know, tip your hat to Boston for moving and also to Sixers if they feel like Fultz is the guy that they absolutely want. And then they have a lot of picks as well that they could kind of play around with. So obviously, there's some things that Boston can do. Draft Express has De'Aaron Fox going to Sacramento Kings at 5. Kind of feel bad for Fox. Seems like a really nice guy, and Kings seem to be kind of a problematic organization still. They still really haven't, you know, gotten back. Be nice for him if maybe he could go 4 to Phoenix, but seems like Givony and the guys at Draft Express say that Josh Jackson's going to go there at 4. But just wanted to say that, you know, De'Aaron Fox, I've seen a couple interviews with him and seems like a really nice guy. It would be nice to see him land somewhere. Give me actually half of a reason to watch some of the Sacramento Kings. I know half of a reason. Not many reasons there to watch it. The Draft Express has Markkanen going to Minnesota at 7. I'm kind of interested to see where he does land, just because it's going to be, you know, it's going to be an interesting development. Him, you know, European who goes to college and is drafted really high. That there are many guys there that have taken that path. So kind of see what goes on there. You know, there's been some talk maybe that New York want him. Obviously, it'd be interesting to see what they do. They're just kind of really an organization in with a lot of problems, and so just see what they do next. They have Draft Express has Frank Ntilikina going to Miami at 14. This has no basis on anything. This is not based on anything, but I kind of think he'll go higher. Obviously, John is much more. Jonathan Givony and the guys are much more informed than I am, but something's telling me that he's going to go higher than 14. The Strasburg youngster. Again, I have no information, but something's telling me that there somebody's going to bring him up higher than 14. And another guy I wanted to just kind of highlight, Jared Allen. You know, Javoni's got him going to the Milwaukee Bucks at 17. And if they can add him, you know, that makes that much team. You know, he's so long and wingspan of, what's he at, 7'5 1/4. You know, 6'11. You know, great rebound, good, you know, shoot, you know, good shot blocker. And you know, they could put him in that lineup, man. That's gonna that's a heck of a team. You know, they're going to be slowly a team that you really, really want to watch. So, otherwise, you know, interesting to see where Harry Giles lands. You know, I've been keeping track of him just because he's been playing at the USA tournaments, World Cup basketball and stuff like that. Terrence Ferguson, it'd be interesting to see where he ends up landing. They have him the Lakers at 28, and just because he's a guy who went abroad instead of going to college, and that's an interesting route and see what people could maybe do. A couple of guys in the first round, kind of looking to see what happens. Will be interesting also to see what happens with Jonah Bolden, a guy who was on the podcast a few months ago, the Australian who was at UCLA, decided to leave and played pretty well at FMP. So that's kind of it. Again, probably just wait till next week and kind of go more in depth about the draft, but did kind of want to highlight a little bit of those guys. So let's get to the interview. This week I had a chance to talk to Terry Upshaw, and Terry Upshaw is interesting in a couple of regards for me, for this audience. He is the head coach at Ridley College. A couple of weeks back, we had Cam Bett on, the English guard who was playing at Ridley College. So Terry Upshaw is actually his coach. And so there's some things, and Ridley seems to be sort of a program on the rise. And so kind of wanted to talk to him about that. And he's also the coach of, and this is the international basketball then angle, he's also the head coach of Jamaica's under-17 team at the Central Basket U-17 Championship down in Dominican Republic in late July. And this is the first time they've ever made it to this tournament, and they qualified for Central Basket after taking third place at the Caribbean U-15. U-16 championship. And Jamaica played at the under 16 Caribbean for the first time since 1998, and now they're at the Central Basket U-17 for the first time ever. And the winner, the top three of the Central Basket, then go to the FIBA Americas. And kind of interesting about this with Upshaw is that the under 18 FIBA Americas is in St. Catharines, and St. Catharines is actually home of Ridley, so he would actually be playing at home basically with the Jamaican national team in St. Catharines, which is about an hour from Toronto, actually much closer, about a half hour or so from the Niagara Falls. So and Terry Upshaw is a Canadian, and he kind of goes into how kind of built up that program and stuff like that. This is his second year with the team. So again, they're trying to qualify for FIBA America's under 18 championship, and that would be the first time ever that a youth team went to a FIBA America's championship. And there's only been one time that Jamaica's played at a FIBA America's. FIBA America Cup, that was 2013. So, there's a lot of history going on here, and with Jamaica and Terry Upshaw. So, without further ado, I'm going to let you listen to the interview, and so enjoy it. Terry Upshaw, head coach at Ridley College in Canada, and head coach of the Jamaican under-17 national team. Okay, so on the show this week, we have Terry Upshaw, the Ridley College head coach and the head coach of the Jamaican under-17 national team this summer. Coach Upshaw, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Gladly. I wanted to, let's kind of start off. There's a couple of different topics that kind of wanted to talk about. Let's kind of start with the... With the Jamaicans, just because, you know, it's an international basketball podcast and talk about the national team sort of first. So you are heading down to, you know what, I forgot to check where it is, under-17s, Central Basket in
Dominican Republic.
In the Dominican Republic. To play at the under-17 Central Basket competition. This is a pretty big deal for you guys. For the Federation. You guys played under-16, under-16 Caribbean Basketball Confederation and finished in the top three at the under-16 level. To go to now the Central Basket, and now these are the qualifiers to go to the FIBA Under-18 Americas Championship next year. I guess let's first start off with coach last year, or are you entering the program now? You were the coach last year, right?
No, I was the head coach last year, the president of Jamaica Basketball, Mark Broomfield, and through a colleague of mine reached out to me about having the opportunity to. They want to build something. They want to build a youth in Jamaica, and so I had ran my own academy here forever in Canada, and you know, had some success there. And you know, I went down for a conversation, and you know, I ended up being fortunate enough to get the position. So we went to the CBCs last year. You know, we did a few challenges, but we made it there. And it was an interesting situation. My first game there, it was the first game that we ever played. And we had 39 turnovers in the first game, but we won it overtime. And we managed to, by hook or by crook, scrape it up and get to a third, and which now qualified us for Central. So our team was pretty young. We had a bunch of kids that were 14 and 15. Some of the majority of the teams had older players, you know, traditionally all 15-year-olds, but the kids played really hard, and you know, we defended and rebounded well, and we were fortunate enough to beat Barbados to move on to the next phase, which is Central Basket this summer in Dominican Republic.
So, had I seen correctly that it was the first time that Jamaica had been in the CBC under-16 since 1998? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So there was, again, with Dr. Mark Broomfield, the new president, had a real push to re-energize the youth. Basketball in Jamaica is a growing sport, and the youth play it, but they've never had a competition. So since then, since the competitions, we've established bi-monthly training sessions for all the U14, the U15 kids in the pod. My assistant coaches down there that live in Jamaica, Dave Black and Lindo and Coach Ludlow run those sessions. Trevor Poyser, who's our FLAS assistant coach, general manager, coordinates it all via Canada because he has a home in Jamaica and has a home in Canada. So he goes down for all that stuff too. And you know, we've been fortunate enough now to actually have training pods where before kids were just playing. And there was no sort of development. And we tried to create a system of a style of play because literally there was none. The disguises played. And so now we're just trying to systematically, you know, teach proper skills and development and, you know, how to play within position and, you know, 1 second advantage, move the ball and, you know, a different style of play, which for me is the biggest thing. Because now I went down about a month ago for a training camp and there was, over the course of the weekend, there's probably about 50 kids that came through and all of them know how to play now. So as far as the way we want to play, Jamaica's very athletic. A lot of athletic athletes. We want to get after people, you know, in the full court, in the quarter court, defensively, establish who we are. And then offensively, because we don't have a plethora of big guys, we really want to share the ball and space people out in a little, not really truly 5-0, but more 4-1 in sort of offensive concepts with a lot of dribble attack with spot-up shooters and, you know, just the ability to play within a system which was never, ever present there. But now it is. And, you know, my hats are off to, you know, Trevor Poyser, Mark Broomfield, Dave Black, and Coach Lindo and Coach Ludlow and Mr. Ramiki for embracing that and, you know, putting together these pods and allowing us to grow with it. We created our own U-Page YouTube page so that all our national team stuffs are videoed, and so that all the coaches see all the drills and they can, you know, participate in the drills correctly and how they're taught correctly. So we're trying to create, educate everybody within the system of how we want to do things.
What was your immediate impression of the Jamaican basketball?
Athletes everywhere. Uh-huh. Too many people staying in the 2-3 zone, okay. Dominated by older guys, and the youth really didn't have enough opportunities. That's why it was, great to go young to start and really embrace it throughout the country. I did a tour from Montego Bay all the way through Kingston. I saw hundreds of basketball players, all of them very eager, all of them very athletic. Not all of them, but like a lot of them very athletic and just a love for the game. The game's really, really having a groundswell in Jamaica, and, people are playing, the traditional games of cricket and, football to the lesser extent are still there. They're still prevalent, but with the youth, there is a real push with basketball.
And how important would you say that it was for you guys to qualify, right away? You've had other, other countries have, the three go up from the CBC to the Central Basket, but sort of in this first attempt to rebuild a program that you guys got up to the next level right away, how important was that?
Well, I think it was massively important because without that, there'd be no training pods. There'd be no, extra development. It would have been probably went back to what it was, just, guys playing and having your high school league and, that would be the extent of it. So now, because of that, there's, like I said before, there's a systematic way of looking at this and trying to build, the country from the youth up, and it's engaged because now all the children see the opportunity. They know there's a team. They know that there's there's a chance to make a team to be able to play out of the country. And if I was a junior college guy, even a Division I guy, I would definitely visit Jamaica because there's athletes all over the place that, definitely can play at the next level. And, the thing that I find really that I'm very happy about is the majority of our guys that I have are strong students because the families may have made education, a priority. And that's great because they learn on the court, they learn in the classroom, and now everybody's going to have an opportunity to have a chance to play at another level besides just locally in high school. And then, now they have a chance to really buy in and, become an NCAA player if that's what their future holds. Without us qualifying, everything's, dead in the water.
From Central Basket, three teams go up to the FIBA Americas. You're talking your Dominican Republics, your Puerto Ricos, your Mexico. Yeah. 2 years ago, Virgin Islands got in there. And actually qualified ahead of Mexico. What kind of goals are you going? Expectations and objectives are you going to Dominican Republic with?
So for me, first of all, I want to qualify. It's really unique with the FIBA Americas being in Canada. They're actually the facility that they're going to be ran in is actually a 2-minute walk from Ridley. It's literally over the bridge. I see it every single day. It's literally over the bridge. And then I want to medal, first qualify and then medal. That's my goal. I think that, the players I've been training, I've been reached out like by the diaspora. I've been reached out from people from England to Canada, to New York City, to Florida with players that are Jamaican. That are living abroad that all want to participate. So it's been overwhelming. People, the communities is a tight community. When they found out that we had qualified, again, I was getting, WhatsApp calls from all over the world and emails from all over the world saying my son is Jamaican. He was born Jamaican. We live in this country. We live in that country. How does he try out? How does he come? He plays here. He plays there. So I think we'll have a strong team. I think that, of the group that went to the CBCs, I know we'll be stronger than that group. Of that group that went, five of them ended up going to prep schools in the States. So they're going to come back a lot stronger than they were just by the day in, day out battle at a prep school in America. and you know, four of them went to the NIPSAC League, which is arguably one of the best leagues in the world, and they all played. So they're going to come back with experience, bigger, faster, stronger, and understanding how hard you have to work. And, you know, and that's going to really benefit what we're trying to get done. And, you know, I'm excited. You know, we had a bit of a training camp. Our next one is the first week of June in New York City. And then we're doing one in Toronto. And then we're going to Kingston and doing our final camp. And then off to the Dominican Republic to try to, you know, qualify.
So it's probably safe to say that the team that was there last year in Guyana is going to be quite different than the one that's going to be showing up in Dominican.
Yes, for sure. 100%. 100%.
Is trying to find guys outside of Jamaica, Jamaicans outside of Jamaica right now, probably the easiest way to compete at the international level until sort of the structures and everything else are built up in the country?
100%. You know, you have players that, like, again, they're all over the world that are Jamaican, yeah, that are playing at high levels. Like, you know, that it's the easiest way to do it. And it's Trevor Poyser, who kind of heads that up, has kind of been, you know, the guy that's kind of been recruiting. But honestly, after we qualified, within 10 days, I had at least 30 emails of kids that wanted to play from other countries. Like, it was just boom, 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 boom. You know, here I go. Parents saying, how do I get involved? My son plays here. My son plays there. He was born in Jamaica. We moved here when he was one. He has his citizenship. We want to play, sort of thing. Because in some of the other countries, they're not making the national team, so there's an opportunity to represent their country, mm-hmm, you know, even though they live in another country, and it's big for the families, right?
And do you see this then as a long-term sort of the start of the Jamaican also senior team kind of getting stronger? I know I just talked to Nick Richards, who's going to Kentucky then, and he said, yeah, you know, I'd like to play for Jamaica one day. You know, you're going to have these international games, these FIBA windows. Do you think that this is, you know, how important is this sort of work that you're, you know, doing right now for the long-term success or the long-term participation of the senior teams?
Well, I think it's paramount, right? Because you know, with us, we have success, and then the group behind us has success. As our student athletes move into university and colleges, you know, they're going to be guys that are going to have an opportunity to represent the country. And in the short term, you know, with success, other people want to be involved. So if they see us qualify, you know, the older guys that are out there that are with the seniors team, they're going to say, well, you know, if these young kids are giving back and representing, I think we need to. But again, my whole thing is try to build the infrastructure of the country, and that way, you know, it won't be a situation where you have to, you know, I guess parachute guys in. It'd be a situation where, you know, domestically we'll be as strong. You know, I being a Canadian, I've seen it happen. Like, you know, 8 years ago when Coach Russell was the first AAU guy, 10 years ago when he first built it, and he took guys of the States and they went to Finley Prep and Huntington and all those other schools. You know, St. Benedict's. I watched that occur, and then, you know, I watched the country change and, you know, really work on their own domestic product. And now, you know, there's a lot of, you know, players from the NBA in Canada, and there's a lot of players from Canada and the NCAA. I see the same thing happening in Jamaica. I really do. I just think that it's, as long as you build, you know, sometimes it's easier to go away to come back, and then, you know, your domestic game will get better. And I'm just hoping that everybody embraces it, and that, you know, there's a lot of talent. And I just look, you know, again, I go on different websites and stuff like that, but there's a lot of talented professionals that are out there. And I think if, you know, as a senior group, if they all came back together, even right now, they could compete. You know, the last FIBA Americas, I think they won two games at. So, you know, that group is still a very young group, and I would love to see them to be able to come back and, you know, participate in these quads or whatever they're called here for the senior men. And then again, have that youth team behind them where one or two or three may be able to make that squad in a couple of years and build the country and build the sport within the country.
Yeah. You're shooting for the first ever Jamaican appearance at the FIBA, under 18 year, America's Championship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's never happened 100%. At the under 16s either.
No, that I know of. I know they had, CBCs, like I said, 10 years ago, and I don't really have my history. I don't know the history if they actually participated after that, but I know we are, and I know that we're building, and, you know, people have been very supportive. The JCA here in Canada, the Jamaican Canadian Association, has been very supportive and helping us with some fundraising. We have a group in New York City that's also been helping with fundraising. We have a group in Florida that's also been helping also. So really, the diaspora has come together to champion this team, again, under the leadership of Mark Broomfield, the president. And it's just been, for me, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be in a few countries coaching. And, you know, this is just the start. You're going to see it's like a flower in the spring opening up. And, you know, I think the sky's the limit because, you know, once corporate Jamaica jumps on and we get some more courts built and more importantly, a few lights up outside, this game can be played everywhere, every day. And, you know, I'm excited.
I was looking around for information and I found a GoFundMe site.
Yeah.
Is that how important or what, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
So we just put that up just to start initially, just to start some, you know, conversation, saying, listen, we're trying to do some stuff here. And the most important thing is our relationship with the Jamaican Canadian Association, where they've allowed us to do a few fundraising events at their place. And that's really helped. You know, we've done a couple of dinners and that's really driven it. And what it's done more than anything is it's shown the business community that, you know, we're serious about what we're doing it. We're transparent. There's an opportunity for them to, you know, understand where their dollars are going to. And that's been the biggest thing, but you have to start somewhere. So we started with that just to show, hey, we're doing this. It's something that we have to get going. Within the country, Jamaican, there's obviously funding, but to bring players from outside of the country to participate, we have to find other resources. It's just, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, so we put our foot forward so that other people can match what we're doing, or at least, you know, try to walk with us. And we've been very fortunate that they've walked with it. Again, it's been Trevor Poyser, leading that. He's been, you know, the lead on that side of it. I'm just trying to focus on the basketball development and, making sure that the systems are tight and making sure that when we get there, that we can, you know, at least show well and knock on wood, qualify.
Top three spots go to FIBA Americas, FIBA 18 under Americas. Well, what do you say you'd have to do to get there?
I think we have to be the best rebounding team in the tournament. I think if we dominate the glass, we'll be fine defensively. I know that athletically, we'll be able to cover, we'll be able to play with most people, at least that I've seen. I've already been watching film left, right, and center, and I think I have a pretty good understanding how people play. There's some countries that have no film, but there's some that do. So, and I just think our guys have to come and fight. I have an idea who my leaders are going to be. Samari Williams, who was our captain from last year, is going to be, you know, return as a captain. He's a player that, you know, has a big heart. He was our two-man last year, and then the championship game, I think he had, well, the game that took us to the central basket, I believe, as our two-man, he had 18 points and 23 rebounds. So, you know, he's just a warrior. And then we have other guys that are going to be there that are, now we have some size, better size than we had last year, that are more experienced. We had some big kids last year, but they just didn't experience. And unfortunately, they moved on to the States to private schools. And now they're coming back bigger, faster, stronger, and an understanding of how to play. And, you know, again, I guess secondly, we can't turn the ball over. You know, it'll be a killer against anyone. You know, I just know what Bahamas is like. I've watched Mexico. I've watched Panama. I've watched Puerto Rico. I've been fortunate enough to coach with the Canadian national program in the past too. So I know how Puerto Rico plays, and, you know, they have great guards and they get after you. And, you know, so I have a pretty good feel for everybody. But for us, we just have to make sure that we play our style and make people play our style and dominate the glass. And I think if we dominate the glass and we don't have turnovers, we'll have a chance.
Let's move over to, I guess, almost your day job. At Ridley College. This year, you guys were in the OSBA for the first time, and reached the quarterfinal playoffs and played against Athletes Institute. maybe just in general, thoughts about this season, your first in the OSBA, which at least sort of from afar seems like it's a very good product, and you know there's a lot of positives that could be built upon. So maybe just in general, your thoughts about also a young team in that group as well. So maybe just talk about this year with Ridley and the OSBA.
Sure. So you know, last year again, like you said, we were the first year in the league. We were the second youngest team. We lost a couple games early that as a coach, I'd like to get back our first few games. But I think that was just more of our first time in. We're playing against teams that, you know, their average age was 19, their average age was 16. And, you know, and then when we played them after Christmas, we beat them up pretty easily. I'm excited about next year. I think that, I think TRC will be good. Orangeville always has a good product. But I think we're going to be there with everybody else. We do return everybody except for two players who are moving on because of graduation. And we're bringing in a 6'10" and a 6'8" and a 6'4" shooting guard. So, we'll be probably the biggest team in the league. We'll probably have two or three Team Canada guys and five Team Ontario players, which is like a provincial team that participates in the Canadian Championships. And I think our guard play, even though last year was strong, I think it's going to be better. I believe we have the best shooting backcourt in the league. We have three of them, and they're all outstanding shooters. Cameron Bett, my son Marcus Upshaw, and Noah Wharton. All of them, if you leave them alone, you're in trouble. And I just believe that it's a good opportunity for us just to really, really prove that we belong at the top two or three. That's why this upcoming year, we're going to lots of events in the States, because last year I only went to one or two because I just felt that we were young and we weren't really ready to shine. And I think now we'll go into the States with the product we have, you know, will be a problem for people, and try to facilitate that our players receive Division I scholarships. That's kind of the goal of the guys. That's why they came. The OSBA for me has been really good. The following's been great. The YouTube channel's been great. Carmelo at Basketball Ontario has done an outstanding job, and Mark, who does all the marketing outside, has been very professional and has really, really pushed it to another level. I know there's going to be a few adjustments for us as a full boarding school. We'd like to see a few more Friday night and Saturday night games because we do have a bit of a captive audience, and our gym is a lot of fun when it's full. So we're pushing hard for that because, any advantage you can get will be great. But, overall, the plan of the league from the strength and conditioning and the periodization and, the talent of the individuals and the coaches in the league, for me, is top notch. I've been, in this game for a long time, and this is exactly what Canada needed, to really have an opportunity for the best kids to play and, more importantly, to have top players stay at home. That trend of, like I said, the early trend of guys running to the States to go to prep schools now is kind of slowed down. It was a flood for a while. Now it's a trickle because there is that opportunity to stay domestically, compete at the same sort of level that you would anywhere in the States and still be at home with mom and dad.
I think that's probably the biggest benefit or the biggest difference that this makes. You have the the appeal of the masses, and as long as the teams still have let's say U.S. trips and stuff like that, so that they feel like they get the necessary exposure. You're seeing facilities that are right up there with things in the States, and I think that could be a really big factor in keeping some guys. And I think, you've also seen some guys come back. Brissett came up back. Washington, I think, didn't he come back as well?
So
there's some recognition that the product up there, and not just the two up in Orangeville, it's there's other places as well that are doing good. What do you think is like the next step or next two steps that you think that Canada should do you see all this talent development. what do you think that they could do? And maybe, you know, maybe if it's one of those, how important is it that you get other provinces? I mean, you see some of these other, you know, these other locations, you know, starting to bring, you know, guys in. You know, you look at Dort and you look at Guerrero, you know, coming from Montreal. You know, you know, how important is it that it's not just Toronto, but, you know, Ontario, yeah, but that the others also, you know, get, you know, I'm going to say carry their weight because that's not correct, but, you know, that gives you even a bigger push in Canadian basketball.
Well, you know, traditionally, you know, Ontario and Quebec have been the hot bags because they've had the most population. You know, so what happened was with Canada basketball under Rowan Barrett and, you know, and Mike Meeks and Greg Francis, who oversee it, they started something called our Junior Academy. And so I think the next real push is to have junior academies in every province, okay, which I believe Greg Francis, who's the technical director, is trying to do. So all the best kids get to train with the best kids. The NPA, which is a rival league to the USPA, do have a bit of a national league going. It's spread out, but, you know, they're doing a very good job just opening up doors for people. And I think a combination of the three of them, if they ever get on the same page, it could be really good as far as a true national championship. But I just think that the development part is the most important. You know, if you have the junior academies moving into the targeted athlete groups in every province and the top 40 or 50 kids in each province are training, you know, it's going to be really easy to put those together as a group and then, you know, play as a club national championship, you know, overseen by Canada Basketball, operated by whomever. I think that that's the next push because with the AAU, it's exploded everywhere across the country. Everybody has teams, everybody's traveling. But I think we got to take a step backwards and really focus a little more on development, not just on getting in a bus and going to play as many games as possible. We don't want to get into the, you know, hockey mentality of playing 80 games a year. We want to make sure that, you know, we're playing 30, 40 games and kids are getting developed. And I truly believe that the junior academies and the target athlete group are the way to go because it's very easy for each province to do that. And then, you know, the next step on top of it. That's what I believe. I think that those things are happening right now. You know, the majority of the provinces are buying into that. At least that's what I see. And, you know, Ontario is kind of the lead on it. But now, you know, other people are doing it and trying to, you know, I guess, follow the leader under the guidance of Canada Basketball and, you know, strictly under Greg Francis' initiative and Mike Meeks with the youth development part. So it's exciting. You know, there's players from... I've known players in Quebec forever that have been very good, but now those players are being recognized. There's, you know, guys in BCs are being recognized, guys in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Nova Scotia, you know, across the province, country now are being recognized. And it's not just an Ontario-centric sort of situation. And now it's a countrywide, you know, scenario. And it's very exciting. There's so much talent. You know, I'd like to also mention a guy by the name of Shane James who created something called the CYBL, which is a Canadian Basketball League, where now all of a sudden it's unbelievable how many youth are playing. And, you know, Basketball Ontario has always been strong doing that. And, you know, there's just places for kids to play now and where before there weren't. And as long as the direction of it is together and that the kids get developed in a proper way and the coaches get developed in a proper way, and the officials, you know, get developed, I think that the sky's the limit for Canada. I really do. It's very exciting. You know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I had my own academy called Rita. I was the only guy in the country that had it. And now there's 26 prep schools in Canada, Ontario alone, right? So there's people are getting in the gym with the kids. They're working with the kids. The kids are getting better. And under the guidance of Canada Basketball, I think the future's bright.
I was going to ask about it. So it's the Regional Elite Development Academy. Maybe sort of, you know, what prompted you to start that? And what do you see? How do you think that's benefited basketball in the country? And who are some of the guys that you just really, really enjoyed coaching in that time with Rita?
So I was assistant associate coach with NEDA, which was the National League Development Academy, where, you know, Kelly Olynyk and Mengistu Arap and other players like that were there. So when the funding change at Canada Basketball, I went to them. They kind of came to me, had a conversation about it, and I started Rita, which is more of a regional one. And you know, we were the only program I know that was accredited by the national body at that time. I'm not sure now if anyone else has been, but you know, some of the guys that played for me. There's a player that plays in Germany, Johannes Manigat, who played at Creighton. Great kid. He played for me there. Grant Mullins, who was at Columbia, and then went on to play at California this year. Connor Wood, who was the player of the year in the CIS this year, U Sports, he played for me also, and he's looking for an opportunity to go over to Europe and play, another outstanding player. And then, you know, there's lots of guys. Casper Lawrence, who was player of the year, MVP down in the AUS, Kevin from St. Evex, who was the player of the year in the AUS, the Lufau brothers, Chatterack, Abednego, and Meshach. Meshach's playing in the Hall this year. Chatterack will play for Wichita State. Abednego was at Arkansas State, who, again, will be going over to Europe to play. And, Kevin Rose, who was another just an outstanding player at St. Mary's. So there's lots of guys that came through, and all of them have been successful. My proudest part of it is that all of them got a degree, and they've moved on to the next phase of their life. And it was an exciting few times. You know, even a player like a Nick Yancey, who stopped playing basketball afterwards, but, you know, academically went to McGill, got a degree. He is now a high-level rower now. So I just think it was a jump-off point for it. And, you know, at the time when I had it, a lot of people disliked the idea of it. They thought, you know, hey, people are paying to train and everything like that. And, you know, you look forward 8 years and everybody's paying to train now. So it was just something that, you know, the Mullins family probably and the Wood family probably were the two biggest advocates of it, because their daughter Missy, who played at Harvard, had played at NITA. And when it stopped, her son Grant wanted a higher opportunity than what was going on locally in high school. And I'm like, here's what we're going to do. Same as Connor Wood and Mitchell Wood. And we ran with it, and it was good. With our first 3 years, we won a national championship south of the border and north of the border. And then, like everything, it was just, my family's getting a little older, and, you know, my wife's like, hey, what are we doing here? And so I had to kind of, after a few years, had to change it up. But by the end of it, you had three different locations going. I was employing, you know, five or six people coaching, and it was a neat thing. But, you know, sometimes, the wives win.
I know a thing or two about that. Let's go back to Ridley then. One of the guys I saw last year was your big guy, Jaden Bediaku. And I especially like in games that were pretty much decided, I just kept on saying to myself, or at least to the TV or to the under 17s I was at the tournament, I'm like, why don't you put him in? You know, give him some time, get him some burn, get him some experience of playing against, you know, these guys. Obviously, you see him firsthand, and I know that Mike Meeks has is working with him a lot. Obviously he's going to be one of your main players, Canadians, you know, Canada's and also you're one of your main players, you know, 2000 born. He's, you know, you'd imagine that he's going to be one of the, you know, could be one of the leaders for the next under 19 championship in 2019 as a 2000 born. You had him all year this year. What are you kind of expecting, hoping that he does, you know, maybe this summer with the under 19s in Cairo, if he fights and makes the team and whatnot, you know, I mean, you know, the big guys in Canada, you guys are producing loads and loads of guards and wings and, you know, maybe a few power forwards, but there's not loads of bigs necessarily that have been helping the national teams. What do you think about Jaden and his development?
Well, I've coached Jaden since grade 9, he's come, you know, with the help of Coach Meeks and other coaches. His improvement is unbelievable. You know, this year he was on the BioSteel game. Mm-hmm. I think Big J is the best big in the country. We played this year in New York City in the league down there. We went down there three times, and at the first part of the year, you know, I was like, yeah, he's okay. It's okay. By the end of the year, the other coaches were asking me if he wants to transfer down there. So, you know, I'm like, no, he's not going anywhere. it's funny you say that with the 17s last year. He actually played more with the 18s last year than he did with the 17s.
Yeah.
Even though he was on both teams, he got more time. I guess, Coach Rana felt that, you know, let's get him in a little bit where, Coach DeVero probably was a little bit more under the gun to actually win in medal. So, maybe that's the situation why he didn't play as much. But he works every day. He's never missed a practice yet this year. Every single day he's at work. He comes to work. He works. Oklahoma's involved now. He's been offered by USC. Oregon likes him. He's going to be really good. He comes and just whatever you want him to do, he works his butt off at it. I think he's going to, as they play him, I think he's going to do very well. Now he can score in both blocks. He's got counters to his go-to moves. He can shoot a little elbow jumper pretty consistently. He runs the floor first big really well. Easy kid to coach, doesn't talk back, doesn't, mumble, anything like that. He's got to be a little stronger, but, with those long limbs, it's kind of hard sometimes to get strong. He's outstanding, and I'm going to have two Betty Echoes out of my school next year because Charles, his younger brother, who will be on, it looks like he'll be on the cadet team, who's about an inch taller than Jay, is coming also. So
what year is he born? Is he 2001 then? Or is he even 2002?
He's 2003 maybe?
2002. Oh, okay.
2002, 2003, somewhere around there. He's a baby.
Uh-huh.
So he's a 6'10 baby. That's more mobile than Jay is right now.
Wow.
And so he's they'll both be here, and they also have another forward by the name of Malcolm Bailey, who is a 6'8" jumping jack with about a 38-39 inch vertical, who just flies. So our front line should be pretty good. And Big Jay's he's the one that sets the bar every day. I love big guys. I love coaching big guys, and I think Jay's one of those guys that will work himself into being a pro one day. I really do, because he just comes and he works. I've had this fortune, like I said, to have Kelly in the gym and Olenek, and I watched him. He's not the same skill set as a Kelly Olenek by any stretch of the imagination, but the work ethic's the same. He's in the gym. He's there early. Doesn't want to leave. You know what I mean? Same sort of guy. His brand of game is a little more he's a bit more of a banger. He's got a little more closer to the hoop. He's not going to, take you off the dribble by any stretch of imagination, but he's going to seal you. He's going to counter seal you. He's going to get in there and do the dirty work. And, old school basketball, which, some people run away from, but I always believe you need someone that you can score in the box if you want to be successful. And especially the way we play, with him, it allows us to let our 3-point shooters, they're open all the time because he accepts double teams. He passes other double teams well. He moves without the ball, and he's just a beast on the glass.
Who would you say is next year is who's the next guy that you who's another guy from next year's team that you're looking forward to watching and seeing how they develop then?
Well, I think there's a few. I think Malcolm Bailey, who's going to move a little bit more to a three-man than a four-man. He wants to play in the wing. He's 6'8". He's got a lot of work. But defensively, he can cover ones and twos and threes. So at 6'8", let's have him try. We might lose a little bit offensively with him, but defensively, we'll make it up. And I'll just, curl him and stuff like that. I think all three of our guards, Marcus Upshaw, Cameron Bett, and Noah Warden, I think all three of those guys will have an outstanding year. They're all getting stronger. They're all in the gym working. We're working right now. And then I would say the leather guy would be Tony Johnson, who is going into grade 10, about 6'7", 6'8", but he's a thick, thick body. Another banger with a real soft touch and high academic kid, about an 89 average, who if I was in Ivy League, I'd be all over him. And he's a kid that no one really knows about. We had injuries last year. Late in the year, we played St. Benedict's, and he played very well against them as a grade 9. And we were playing against, guys in grade 12, and, just didn't, they were a little faster, quicker, but they're also 4 years older than them. But he's going to be very good, a kid that plays in the CIA Bounce organization. And I think, lastly, Anthony Dawu, who 91 average, doesn't even know how good he is, 6'6", shooting guard, like a 3. Last year, in the last four games, he was 38 of 50 from the three. And, last five games. And I'm like, and he was scoring double figures the whole time. And I'm like, that way you know. And I showed him the stats, and I showed him the film, and he's like, I didn't know I could shoot like that. I said, yeah, well, you can. So just do it. But I'm excited about a lot of our guys. You know what I mean? Again, then we have some young guys coming in with Charles Bediako and Jalen Spencer, who both are young guys that are going to be the future. And they're both very talented. And, you know, the Spencer boy's around 6'4", 6'5". He's a two. So as the three graduate, you know, well, the two graduate, we'll have some guys to come in and back them up. But I'm excited. And while we're talking about Ridley, we are doing an international tournament this year at Christmas time. So if you know any clubs that want to come over, it's a U19 tournament. You know, we'll do traditionally. We'll take care of their their housing and their food while they're there. They just have to get over here, and we like to try to build something special here at Ridley College. You know, bring in 4 or 5 international teams to participate in our annual Christmas tournament.
All right, I do have people who listen to the show, so if that ever comes out there, and if I hear of anybody, I will pass it along. Coach Upshaw, I've taken up plenty of your time, and I know you have, if nothing else, a video of Dominican Republic or whoever else to watch or go look for. thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Good luck this summer. You know, it's going to be – I know probably not many people are going to be watching the Centro basket with huge interest, but that's an emerging country, and so that's you look at some of the guys who are out there already, and like you said, there's loads of athletes, and if they can get developed, it could be something pretty good there. So really excited, looking forward to seeing what happens down in Dominican Republic this summer. And then also Ridley. It would be pretty cool to see to walk across the bridge to under-18s, I'm sure.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. And, yeah, that's the dream, and hopefully we can get there. And, I just think that, basketball is exciting, and opportunities are exciting. And like I tell my guys every day, all you have to do is try to make the most of your opportunities. And that's what we're going to try to do at Ridley and also with Team Jamaica.
All right, fantastic. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
Okay. Good luck to Terry Upshaw, and good luck to the Jamaican national team there at the Central Basket U17 championship. There's a reason for you to watch that tournament now. Other teams, in case you're wondering, okay, so who are they facing? You're going to have you'll have Dominican Republic. You will have, Puerto Rico is in there. Virgin Islands is in there. Panama is in there. Let me see who else is in there. Sorry about that. Virgin Islands actually qualified last time at the under 18. They made it to the under 18. FIBA Americas from Central Basket. So sorry about this, Central Basket. So it's Dominican, Panama's in there, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, Bahamas, Mexico, Guyana. So top three end up going to the FIBA U18 America's championship, with then the top four going to the FIBA U19 Basketball World Cup 2019. So I know, gotta keep track. All right, so that's the interview of the week. Thank you for hope you enjoyed that. There is also just so that I'm starting to really hammer out stuff, and I'm not totally putting out all of the notices on Twitter or whatnot, but keep track of the European Championships. So FIBA under seven, FIBA U16, U18, U20, A and B European Championships, as well as the FIBA under 19 World Cup. So just keep watch on those Last thing I'll let you know is what you're going to be listening to. The song is Hand Jive, and it is by the Jerkon 5. Enjoy that. And we'll talk to you next week. Next week, actually, I'm still here in Germany. And then the week after that, we'll be in Cairo for the Under-19 Basketball World Cup. But next week is a big round episode. So with that, here's the end of episode 249. And we'll talk to you at episode 250. So be well.
Well, I know a cat named Wail Willie.
He's got a cool little chick named Walking Nelly.
He can walk and stroll and Susie Q
and do that crazy hand jive too.
Papa, tell me, are you my home?
You then hand jive and got to go.
He said, Papa, don't put me down.
They're doing the hand jive all over town.
Hand jive, hand jive, hand jive. Do that great hand jive, yeah.
Mama, look and John John look.
He's doing that hand jive with Sister Flo. Said, do that hand jive one more time.
Well, the doctor, the lawyer, and the Indian chief,
they all did that good quality, baby.
Why I'm waiting, get them all in shreds.
When we hear that hand with these feet.
Hello, it's Furkan Korkmaz from Balmit. You are listening to Taking a Charge.